Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ryan Scott. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Matthew Earhart, MD, MS, on the evaluated association of modifiable health conditions as well as social determinants of health in relation to late mortality in survivors of childhood cancer. Dr. Earhart is a pediatric hematologist-oncologist at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Earhart discussed how modifiable chronic health conditions may relate to social determinants of health, noting how these factors can potentially lead to late mortality for survivors of childhood cancer. Thank you so much again for being here and speaking with me about some of your recent research that you've done that was published in JAMA recently. So to kick things off, can you begin by providing what key concerns and what key questions you were aiming to address with this research?
Sort of in the realm of cancer survivorship, we've known for quite a while that cancer survivors are at increased risk for chronic health conditions, and we've known that they're at increased risk of early death in relationship to their cancer experience and their cancer treatments. For a few specific outcomes like heart failure, for example, we've known that individual chronic health conditions like high blood pressure dramatically increase the risk of development of heart failure above and beyond that of the treatment exposures that are associated with it in the first place. And so that really got us thinking, could looking at a similar analysis with respect to mortality or causes of death give us some key targets of intervention when we're thinking about studies to reduce those increased causes of death in cancer survivors? So that's really what prompted this, was the idea of looking at chronic health conditions that we have treatments for, or those that we considered modifiable, in the context of other potentially important factors like sociodemographics and treatment exposures themselves, to better learn what future targets for intervention might improve the health and well-being of these long-term survivors.
Upon determining what questions you wanted to address, what methodologies were utilized to observe eligible individuals, as well as what individuals were observed?
So the study that we used, or the cohort that we used for this analysis, was the St. Jude Lifetime Cohort Study. This is a longstanding cohort now that's prospectively followed. And to be a participant in this cohort or eligible for the cohort, childhood cancer survivors treated at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital have to have survived at least 5 years from their cancer diagnosis. So anyone that met those criteria, whether they were currently living or deceased, was eligible for the analysis. And for the specific part of the analysis where we looked at relationships between modifiable risk factors and social determinants of health and mortality, that required that individuals were actual participants of the study. So we had about a little over half of the eligible five-year survivors who were participants in the association part of the study.
What findings were revealed when conducting the study?
I think the most important things, or at least as I see it, were three fairly key associations. The first was that, as we suspected, modifiable chronic health conditions, such as high blood pressure, or things like obesity, dyslipidemia, the presence of those and in increasing numbers was associated with increased risk of mortality in our cancer survivors. In addition to that, we saw that frailty, it's a well-established sort of measure or marker of aging, but it's a composite of low lean muscle mass, self-reported exhaustion, low energy expenditure, slowness, and weakness. It was associated with increased mortality in these survivors as well. And then the last key association, I think, was that we saw that the area deprivation index, which is a well-established marker of regional level deprivation, which accounts for educational level, employment status, housing quality, and poverty measures, and these are at the census block level, that was associated, even when adjusting for the things we know, like chronic health conditions now, and treatment exposures that that area deprivation index was associated with an increased risk of death in cancer survivors as well.
Were there any findings that were particularly surprising or notable that you'd like to highlight as well?
To some degree, we saw what we expected. We hypothesized that those things would be associated. I was surprised to the degree with which the area deprivation index in particular was associated with an increased risk of mortality. So we saw fairly significant increases, even when accounting for things like treatment exposures, which we know are key drivers of late health risk or adverse health risk in cancer survivors. The biggest, not surprise, but take-home message was that this is such a multifactorial problem and that we can't address any one component and really expect highly impactful changes, that we have to think about all these things together when we're thinking about interventions to improve the health and well-being in these survivors.
JAMA stated that this is the first research of its kind to prove that a location that scored poorly on the area deprivation index is independently associated with an increased risk in mortality among pediatric cancer survivors. So, with all that being said, how will this data now be used to begin addressing changes to help these patients?
This is the first I'm aware of in this particular population. We've known that area deprivation index is associated with poorer health outcomes in other groups of patients. And there's been some work done with cancer survival in general, meaning do you survive, including the treatments and things of a primary cancer. But when we're talking about long-term or 5-year survivors, how their long-term health, this was novel. What's most important for it going forward is cancer survivorship research has been around for a few decades now and has really developed this robust knowledge and understanding of what challenges cancer survivors face. And we're shifting that research body and into more of a paradigm of interventions, trying to reduce those risks moving forward. And I think what this adds is that it tells us we can't just have a specific intervention for a specific problem and necessarily expect meaningful impact on the outcome. For example, if you're trying to reduce mortality, just addressing high blood pressure or diabetes or other modifiable health conditions may not be enough. I think we really need to involve multidisciplinary teams like our social work partners and try to address the access to resources that can improve those individual health outcomes. While that seems intuitive, I think it's an important step to show it because that's a key part of building those research interventions and protocols going forward.
The study suggested that efforts to increase access to medicine, combined with policies that seek to facilitate this access, may improve the well-being and lifespan of childhood cancer survivors. Can you continue to expand on how these efforts will be vital and of importance moving forward?
I want to make clear that what we've identified is an association, and that doesn't always mean causality. So we don't know for sure that these markers of deprivation, for example, actually cause or contribute to increased mortality. But we see a strong association, and that's where these types of things start and where the research begins. So knowing that there's an association there provides a key target for intervention. We really need these multi-step approaches. So improving access to medication may very likely reduce the risk of late mortality in some of these patients. So access to specific medications like a treatment for high blood pressure, for example, but it's likely not enough. We really need to improve, for example, access to green space or access to healthy food sources so that patients can take this sort of multifaceted approach to addressing those health conditions that they have. From the policy standpoint, it's policies that can help improve access to those resources that we would then hypothesize could have an important impact down the road. But we really need the studies to start to evaluate these things and demonstrate a stronger body of evidence that that's in fact true.
Are there any next steps with the study that you'd like to see taken?
I think the next logical step, not necessarily an extension of this study, but the next logical step in this body of research is starting to develop the actual interventions. And the interventions themselves are not new. We've had interventions to try to reduce heart failure, for example, or to improve exercise in patients. The component that has not been robustly done, I would say, thus far, is including these other aspects like access to resources. And I think we're starting to see that. We're seeing frontline clinical trials, for example, where they're trying to incorporate access to healthy foods, for example, for patients undergoing cancer treatment. I think these are all key first steps, and I think that's where we need to go in survivorship research too, where the intervention is actually a package of interventions instead of just improving access to a medication or even just showing that taking a medication improves your outcome. We should improve access to the medication, improve support for taking the medication, and improve access to these other resources that can also contribute to the same outcome in the same studies.
What would be your main key takeaway just based on the conversation we've had today and the research that you were a part of?
If I can, there'd be two takeaways. One for the research community, which is working within multidisciplinary research teams to think about how we can target the multiple aspects that might be contributing to these adverse outcomes in the same clinical trials, for example, or same intervention studies, really pulling in experts with regard to chronic health management, for example, and those that have more experience with area deprivation and potentially policymakers that help to improve that, putting those people all under the same roof, so to speak, so that we can develop robust studies that attack this from a multi-pronged approach. That would be the message to the research community. And it's somewhat similar for the clinical community as well. But I think practitioners need to, as much as they can, try to take the time to understand some of these other factors that we're not as well equipped to address, perhaps, such as the area deprivation. So I think our healthcare structure, the way that it is, somewhat restricts the amount of time that we can spend with patients. So we're often in there with a very focused approach about understanding the immediate things we can fix. But particularly in the cancer world or the oncology world, we often have access to very strong multidisciplinary teams that include members like our social workers. And I think really taking the time to understand what environments patients are coming from and what access to resources they have, either directly or with the assistance of these multidisciplinary teams, can help us to think about how to counsel patients better. And more importantly, how to help identify and improve their access to resources that will hopefully result in better outcomes overall.
That's all we have today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.